We're about to begin a brand new malacha, and this malacha really has a lot of applications, not just in terms of a Shabbos, but it touches on many other areas of malacha as well. We've said this many times, that whenever you have a malacha on Shabbos, so very often you have to look at how that particular term, how that phrase plays out in other areas of malacha, and that sheds significant light on the Shabbos part of the sugya. We've seen this time and time again. We saw it in Vishal. Whenever you learn a Shabbos, you have to learn Bas V'Cholom. You see this in Kol Boker, the other way around. You learn Bas V'Cholom, you have to learn a Shabbos. We saw this all the way back in the Malachas of Zareya. It impacted on Hilchos Kelayim, Hilchos Shemitah, and the sugyas of Losh, impact on Hilchos Chalas. A lot of areas of Malacha become interrelated to Shabbos. And one of the Malachas that you see this really a significant amount is the next Malacha that we're about to embark on. That's the Malach of Kosev, of writing. Reason why this impacts on so many other areas of halacha, there are so many other areas of halacha that depend on ksiva. So let's say, for example, ksiva said get. So the chosim was sefer krisos, or ksiva sefer Torah, ksiva parshas with tefillin, mezuzah. So very often we find dealing with the Torah that revolve around the notion of writing, and much of the discussion with Shabbos is going to be some of the similarities and differences between the hagadaras of ksiva, the definitions of ksiva, both in terms of Shabbos as well as in Kol Torah Kula. So we're going to begin with the first question that was a startling opinion of Rishonim, and we'll give a disclaimer that it's really a Das Yochid in Rishonim, but even though it's only an individual opinion of Rishonim, it has collected so much Torahs all about it that it's, you would almost think, you're always going to get the impression like it must be like Rabbi Rishonim holding that way. It's not really true. That Rabbi Rishonim never even heard of such an opinion. And that is the view that it appears in the Sefer Azaruah, one of the Gedolei Rishonim. It appears in several other Ashkenaz Rishonim as well. And that's the idea that Kosef Min HaTorah is only violated if a person writes in Ksav Ashuris. Well, we'll see, maybe something else, but hold it off for a moment. In Ksav Ashuris, maybe like you write a Sefer Torah. So if you write a beautiful Aleph with the form properly, like you would write for Sefer Torah, you write a Shin with the form, Mavash of the Shin, of Shema Yisrael, and the Torah, of the Zuzas, then you chayef for Kosev and Shabbos. If you simply write some notes in English, and you write in other languages, other characters, so then that would not be a Nisa D'Oraisa. It would be Mutter, it would only be a Nisa B'Derabbanan. So again, that is the minority view of Rishonim. We don't really accept that in the halacha, but such a sheet does exist. Where in the world did that sheet come from? The Heichet Pesach, such a thing. So much of that sheet, a very famous Gemara, we spoke about this Gemara many times. It's a Gemara in Gittin and Avchaz, it's a Gemara in the 7th Baruch of Bava Kama. But the Gemara talks about a person buying land in Eretz Yisrael, and the sale is taking place on Shabbos of all times. He's trying to buy some land off of the non-Jews. So that's a very important thing. We want Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. We want the land to be under Jewish ownership. So that's a good, positive thing. We should be Yishuv Eretz Yisrael to buy land from the non-Jews. But it happens to be that the sale has to take place on Shabbos. The non-Jews leave the town. He doesn't want to sell to come back on Sunday. It's either now or never. So what, if anything, are you permitted to do for the purpose of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? So it's interesting because the context of this Gemara is not even about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael proper. It's actually talking about buying land in Syria. Syria is not even 100% halachic Eretz Yisrael. Syria is like Syria, that area up in the north of Eretz Yisrael, which has a very, very strange status of Kedusha vis-a-vis Eretz Yisrael. It's what the Gemara calls a Gittin Kibush Yochid. It was conquered, but it was conquered by David HaMelech, almost more of it as an individual than as a representative of the Tzibah. It wasn't really done Kedas Uchadin. It wasn't really done under the jurisdiction of the Sanhedrin, where according to some Rishonim, was actually done not even halachically 100% correctly, because although there is a concept of adding on to Eretz Yisrael, it passed the official Gevulos Haaretz, but that is only supposed to be done after the official rules are first conquered. So the Sifrei, actually, on the end of yesterday's parsha, the Sifrei says in the pasuk that after you conquer Eretz Yisrael, if you want to extend the borders of Eretz Yisrael, that's okay, but only after you already conquered the halachic borders first. And then the Sifrei criticizes David HaMelech that he went and fought, he was waging wars all the way up in the north outside of halachic Eretz Yisrael. And the Sifrei says that some of the palfa shechol kavashna. He said, next to your own palace, you didn't capture it. They hadn't even talked of Yerushalayim yet. So what are you doing running up the middle of nowhere adding on to Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael itself wasn't fully conquered. So the Gemara says that therefore Syria had not a full-fledged status of Eretz Yisrael. What was it? So very, very unclear. So the Gemara has a whole discussion about what the unique status of Syria is. Is Syria chayv and Jumas Amas? It's not chayv and Jumas Amas. They're right. So they're abona. What exactly is going on? The whole long sugya says getting about it. And because on the one hand it was conquered, on the other hand it wasn't conquered 100% correctly, so it has some kind of a strange, somehow in the middle status of Eretz Yisrael. So one of the dinim that the Gemara discusses is, if a person buys land, buys a house in Syria, so would we apply the kulas of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael to him? Would we say that just as when you buy land in Tel Aviv, you buy land in Yerushalayim, you buy land in Eretz Yisrael proper, so there's going to be a certain kula Hilcha Shabbos for you? Would that carry over to Syria as well? The question is yes. The Kona bias, the Syria can Kona Pavar Yerushalayim. It's like you're buying in the suburbs of Yerushalayim. I'm not saying the price is the same, but it's still halachically the same. So the bottom line is that there is some kind of a kula playing out for Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. What is that kula? So the Gemara says, the kula is kosher of Ono Afilu B'Shabbos. You're allowed to sign the document even on Shabbos itself. The question is, wow. Sign the document on Shabbos. Crazy, I can just sign a document on Shabbos. And Chayef Skeel, I'm going to sign a document on Shabbos. But it's not a Chash. It doesn't mean you're going to sign a document on Shabbos. What it means is Omer L'Nochim Yosef. It means you're going to ask a non-Jew to sign the document for you. That's what you're going to do. All right. Nishka Fel, the Gemara says, that's not so terrible. After all, Amir L'Yakom, asking a non-Jew to do anything is only in the Rabbanon anyway. So Chazal lifted the prohibition of whatever this prohibition is of Amir L'Yachom, which is only the Rabbanon anyway, Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. That's all the Gemara said, that you're allowed to ask the non-Jew to do the signing, Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So the Orzarua has a comment in this Gemara, that Orzarua says, what do you mean Chazal stop lifting Amir L'Yachom just like that? We don't usually lift Amir L'Yachom, even with a mitzvah, very, very rarely is there an outright head to do Amir L'Yachom. We are familiar with certain coolers of Amir L'Yachom. You can ask a non-Jew to do it. There are abundance. Crutch together a few coolers. So then you have a certain leeway when it comes to Amir L'Yachom. But unfortunately, there's a big mistake in people's minds about Amir L'Yachom. People basically have the attitude is, well, whatever I can, fucking still ask a non-Jew to do. No, that's wrong. The starting point is, whatever you can do, you can't ask a non-Jew to do it. Sometimes there are coolers. There are some cases that Chazal lifted the prohibition very, very limited times. So as Ruh says, it's hard to believe that Chazal just stopped lifting the prohibition of really Hakam Hakol Mikol Kol just to buy land in Eretz Yisrael. It must be what the Gemara means is as follows, that even if I would sign the document myself, it wouldn't be a deraisa. Why would it be a deraisa? Because I'm not signing the document in Hebrew. The non-Jew doesn't know how to read Hebrew. I'm signing the document in English. I'm signing the document in Spanish. I'm signing the document in French. I'm signing another language. So comes here as Ruin says, since anyway you're signing the document in another language, so at worst that would only be a derabbanan. Now you're asking a non-Jew to do a derabbanan for you. Oh, now we can negotiate. Now we can talk. And they ask a non-Jew to do a derabbanan for Mokom Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, then we can understand why Chazal looked the other way. But if writing with Shai Lashon would have been a deraisa, then it wouldn't have even been up for discussion. It wouldn't have been on the radar screen. Nobody ever would have been mad there. Amir L'Yachom outright. That's how the Ezra presents the Gemara. So the Ezra read into this Gemara. You see from here that Chazal held that the whole Isser of writing with Shai Lashon is called only a derabbanan. Now, truth to be told, as we start off the Shir by saying, most of the Rishonim never such thing. Most of the Rishonim say, of course, it's deraisa. So what does the Gemara mean? So the Gemara means exactly what the Ezra said. The Gemara couldn't have possibly meant. What the Gemara means is, yep, Amir L'Yachom on a deraisa. Even though signing a name in English is an outright issa deraisa, it doesn't matter. Amir L'Yachom trumps. I'm sorry, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael trumps Amir L'Yachom. So even Amir L'Yachom on otherwise issa deraisa, the Jew would have done it himself. It would have been prohibited in that time. Huh? But the fact that I'm asking the non-Jew to do it, Amir L'Yachom would be permissible. So that's the opinion of most of the Rishonim. Then within those Rishonim, then there's a further breakdown. How does this impact on Amir L'Yachom in general? So there's one opinion, the Bala Itter, who said, that you see from this Gemara, that Amir L'Yachom is lifted from Mokom Mitzvah. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, it's a very important mitzvah, but it's no more or less than any other mitzvah. And therefore, just as Chazal lifted Amir L'Yachom from Mokom Mitzvah, they lifted Amir L'Yachom for all mitzvahs, not just Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So if I need a sefer across the street, I can ask the non-Jew to carry for me. I need something for my Shabbos meal, I can ask the non-Jew, whatever you name it. That would be a very, very far-reaching kula. That's the famous view of the Balat Itter. It's the base of the Balat Itter Shita that it became popular in many communities in Europe to have, in a sense, what has colloquially come to us known, to be known as the Shabbos Goy. But the notion of Shabbos Goy basically meant was that everything was Mokom Mitzvah. What does a Jew do on Shabbos? It's not Mokom Mitzvah. What do you think? What should you be doing? Should you be doing anything else? Not Mokom Mitzvah. Either you're davening on Shabbos, you're learning on Shabbos, you're having a suit on Shabbos. Or what else could you possibly be doing? It's not Mokom Mitzvah. So if you needed a non-Jew to turn on the lights, to help you learn, to light a fire, to help you learn, to help you daven, to help you suda, whatever you needed was Mokom. If you hold like that, when the Gemara says that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to buy land in Eretz Yisrael, and buying land in Eretz Yisrael was just an example of a mitzvah, but it's true for all other mitzvahs. So really, Yaakov is looking for a mitzvah. So there are more rights that there used to be people in Europe who used to rely on this opinion. And this again, this has followed us to this day as well. That notion to people's minds, the Shabbos Goy, if anything, any Mokom Mitzvah whatsoever, the Rambam recommends not following this view. Most of the Shabbos didn't subscribe to this view. It's not really proper to follow this view. So we really try to avoid following this, you know, across the board, Kula, and really Achav Mokom Mitzvah is Mokom. What we probably hold is closer to what Tosfos writes, is that it was a special Kula for Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael was a very, very special mitzvah. Either because it's a mitzvah show rabbim, or there are other reasons why Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is such a significant mitzvah. So that particular mitzvah, they lifted a Miriam Yaakov. Doesn't mean that they lifted it for Talmud Torah. Doesn't mean they lifted it for sitting in the Sukkah. Doesn't mean they lifted it for any Shabbos. So you have to judge mitzvah by mitzvah. We don't have any precedent in Chazal that they lifted a Miriam Yaakov for any and every mitzvah under the sun. So that's how we assume Malacha. We try to assume Malacha that a Miriam Yaakov was, in fact, not absolutely violated every single time. Every time a mitzvah comes your way, you can violate right and left of Miriam Yaakov. It's something very, very unique because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Chayyadam that even though we try not to rely on the Smal Itter, we do fall back on the Smal Itter b'shas al-Chagodo, like when you have mitzvah shel Rabim. So the famous Pesach of the Chayyadam that if the Erev breaks in town on Shabbos, you're allowed to have a non-Jew come and fix it, even though it will involve knocking a nail, since you want to kind of potential derisive of the point, other malachas, so you're allowed to have the non-Jew fix it on Shabbos. Why is that? Because that's a big, big mitzvah shel Rabim. Because otherwise, everyone's going to be nichshav, everyone's going to take the Arabs up, everyone's going to be carrying shit like it is, a big, big mess for the tzibur. So that's such a huge mitzvah. So mitzvah sharab, we can fall back on the Baal Itter Shita. But it's not such a tremendous tzarech, but we try not to follow it. But getting back to that story, so the Arzaruah derived this entire Shabbat Torah that writing with other languages is only a derabbanan from this sugya. Again, Reuben Rishon didn't buy into this. Within the view of the Arzaruah, though, okay, he wasn't the only Rishon to suggest such a view. Within that view of the Arzaruah, we have to further analyze, are there any other Makaris and Shas? Everything is built on this. Are there any other Makaris and Shas, one way or the other, either in support or defense of the Arzaruah's Chiddush? A very, very huge problem with the view of the Arzaruah is that the Arzaruah doesn't seem to be, not only against it, it's against the Mishnah. It's against the Farish Mishnah. The Mishnah says black on white, no pun intended. There's a writing that says black on white. The Mishnah says Shabbos and Brech Avoyne, HaKaisi B'cholosh and Chayev. It says it in the Mishnah, Chayev, you know, Chayev, Ches Yod Yod Beis. If we don't know what that word means by now, we've been learning for Shabbos for 3 years, we're in trouble. So HaKaisi B'cholosh and Chayev, Chayev means an Issa D'Raisa by definition. So how in the world can the Azrael tell us the story that writing B'shar Loshon is only the Rabbanan? It's against the Mepherish of Mishnah, HaKaisi B'cholosh and Chayev. So the Prima Godim suggests that maybe what the Azarua would say to us is as follows. If you look carefully at the Lashon HaMishnah, what the Mishnah does not say is a Kais B'chol Ksav Chayev. The Mishnah says a Kais B'chol Lashon Chayev. Like Kichsavam B'chol Shonam, not the Kriya Samigila. There is a big difference between the word Ksav and the word Lashon. Ksav refers to the script, to the form, what the letters look like. Lashon refers to what language the words are written in. Those two are not necessarily the same. We usually use, in a sense, English letters, quote unquote, English letters to write the language English. We usually use Hebrew letters to write the language Hebrew, but not necessarily. There are some times that we could use Hebrew letters to write English words. We do it all the time. Ever go to a wedding, listen to Ksuba. So a wedding taking place in Tinek. So Tinek is an English woman. English word, whatever the source of the word Tinek is. But how do we spell it? Tes Yud Nun Ayin Kuf. That's not a Hebrew word. That's another language that is borrowing Hebrew characters to write with. So we do this all the time. There are a lot of languages that are totally different languages that borrow Hebrew characters. It's called Yiddish. That's how you write Yiddish. The words in Yiddish are just simply borrowing the Aleph Beis and plugging in an entirely different. You're basically writing some conglomeration of old German with some other words thrown in Hebrew characters. So comes the Pirugadim and says, that's why the Mishnah is very, very midduk, and it's Lashon. The Mishnah says, Akaisi b'chol Lashon chayim. He said, it doesn't really interest us what the language that you're writing is, but what does interest us is that the ksav. The Torah does not recognize other ksavim. The official script that the Torah recognizes, the same way that in Hilchos Sefer Torah, it's full of mezuzahs, so there are halachas that govern the aleph beis. You have to write in Aramaic. You can't write the words of the Sefer Torah to mezuzahs in other languages. You have to write another ksav, and you have to write a dafka in the ksav Ashuris. That's the only ksav that the halachic recognizes. So too, for Hilchos Shabbos purposes, that's the only ksav that the Torah recognizes. The language, the words could be a lot of other words. We know that the Torah recognizes other languages. There are many, many mitzvahs that can be said in other languages. You can say Kriyashma in other languages. You can say brachas in other languages. There are certain mitzvahs that have to be said dafka b'lashon HaKodesh. That's a sugim. It's like a soita. The other gemara, there are some sugim. You have to say b'chas kodem kosev baruch. It's got to be kodem. It's exactly like this. You can't say b'chas kodem yishal bless you and guard you, etc. It wouldn't be yitz b'chas kodem. Or parash zechalitz. Or parash zechalitz kocha. You have to say dafka b'zeh loshon. But there are a lot of mitzvahs when the Torah doesn't specify the opposite of Zahal Lashon, you could just simply translate it. So you could say Shema, Hero Israel. You could be Yad Sebed HaTorah Kriya Shema. Mishnah Brura strongly recommends not to do that. Unless a big Shas and Chach, we don't like the encouragement with the Daven and say Brachas in other languages. Mishnah Brura writes because that was part of the beginning of reform. To change, they started to change the Davening and Daven into German. That was the beginning of the end. So he says, we try very, very hard not to do that. Once you have a case of Al-Truma, that Mamish can't, first going for you, Mamish can't read the Hebrew, can't break the seat of the Hebrew. So then we would recommend him to daven in English, say Bracha, say Kriyashma in English, because he ends up with Shal Lashon. So the Torah does recognize Shal Shonos, but the Torah does not recognize Shak Sabbath. That's the suggestion of the people around him. That idea actually has its roots in Rishonim in a different sugya, not here, in the sugya of Kriyas HaMegillah. The whole famous sugya, the second verse of Megillah, about reading the Megillah in other languages. There's a whole discussion. Someone who speaks English, can they read it in English? So the Gemara basically comes out as follows, that Rishonim come out, that you can be Yaitzei Kriyas HaMegillah in other languages, provided two things. Provided that you speak that language, so you understand what's going on. And number two, provided that that is the spoken language, or a quasi-spoken language in that location. If it's either you don't understand the language, or the people don't speak the language, then it's not acceptable. That's what the Mefarshim explained, that although the Torah does recognize only Shonos, other Lashonos are only recognized because the Olam considers them to be a language. Let's say, for example, what's the difference between a guy grunting? And I'm going to walk around, I'm going to say, and I'm going to tell you, in my dictionary, that means Vahibi Mechashverish. So that wouldn't be acceptable. Why? If everybody in town would understand those grunts, then that would be a language called grunting language. So that would be okay. So other languages get their kochos from the Haskamas B'nai Adam. The fact that people agree to treat this as words in the literally Glosh B'nai Adam, a desk means a desk, a chair means a chair, a house means a house, and a cup of water means a cup of water. So since everybody in town is using those same terms and understands what those terms mean, so the Torah considers that halachically to be a language. That's the Ran, the Beis of an Aleph Maseches Nedarim, develops this idea, where the Ran says that when the halach is, you can have a ned that's chavach halosha. A guy takes a nedr in English, that's also called a ned, it's also binding as a nedr. So you don't need Lashon HaKodesh, the Ran says. How do you define whether something's called a language or not? So the Ran says, let's say a guy says like this. A guy says, and then he tells you, not my language, my secret private language, that means that this bread should be also to me. So the Ran writes, that's not a Nebuchadnezzar. Right? Why? Because that's not a Lashon, that's just grunting, it's making noises, making sounds. It's not a language. A language, by definition, has to be a way that people communicate, people understand one another. So it has to be something that you personally understand and the people in that location understand as well. That's what the Mishnah Brura has a whole arichas about this in Hilchos Kriyashma. And he says that you can be Yotzei Kriyashma in English, but if you live in America, you can't be Yotzei Kriyashma in England. Maybe English may be a good idea because English is maybe spoken to a certain degree in many, many, many countries in the world. It's the other languages, the language that most people don't speak. So let's say, for example, Russian. So in America, most people don't speak Russian. Most people don't understand Russian. So the guy wants to say Kriya Shma in Russia you can be Yotze, in America you can be Yotze. Maybe in Eretz Yisrael you can be Yotze. In Eretz Yisrael, it's a language. It's on the riots and all the street signs. So then you have to figure out at what point you say something is spoken enough in that location. I don't know, do you need road people? Do you need a significant amount of people? I'm not sure where you draw the line, but it has to be. If it's something that nobody really, most people don't really understand, that wouldn't be acceptable. So the only thing is that when it comes to Lashon HaKodesh, Lashon HaKodesh is objectively a language. That's the language that Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world. That's the language the Torah was given in. So that's the language that the Halacha recognized. That's an objective language. All other languages are subjective languages, and Lashon HaKodesh is an objective language. Therefore, you can be Yaitin Lashon HaKodesh in the middle of the North Pole. Nobody speaks Hebrew North Pole. The penguins are in the South Pole. Okay. Polar bears, they don't speak Hebrew. Nobody speaks Eskimos. Nobody speaks Hebrew. You can still be Yaitin because Hebrew is a Lashon HaKodesh is an objectively acceptable language. Or let's say I don't speak Lashon HaKodesh. I can still be Yaitin. There are certain mitzvahs that I have to understand what I'm doing. It's like Kriya Shema. If I don't speak Hebrew, I don't understand what I'm saying. And I can't be Yaitz because I'm lacking Kavanah Sadvar. Let's say other mitzvahs, you don't need Kavanah Sadvar. I don't have to know what I'm saying. I have to say the words. So it's nice if I know what I'm saying, but I don't have to. So if I bench in Lashon HaKodesh and I don't understand a word that I'm saying, I'm still Yaitz. If I bench in English and I don't understand the word, then I'm talking about Yaitz. So the Gemara in Megillah is a whole sugya about reading the Megillah B'Shal HaShoynes. It would be acceptable if you understand it and people around you understand it. But the Kamsa B'Shoynes and say, Bamed B'Mamurim, if the Megillah is written the Ksav HaShiris, and the Megillah is not written in Hebrew characters, that's not a Megillah. It's like Kisra Kodesh. So if you would write it in Hebrew characters, that's right. What would that mean? You could write it with English words, in Hebrew characters. You would write in the days. You would write Aleph Yud Nun in the days. Dalid has spelled days. In the days of Achashverosh, he was every Hebrew word. You have to, every English word, you have to, you know, use the Hebrew characters. Like in Rav Moshe Shuvos, when he wants to write about a microwave, so he writes a microwave, Mem Yud Yud Kuf Radio. He writes about a car, he writes Kuf Aleph Resh, it's about a machine, Mem Aleph Shin Yud. You have to use Hebrew letters, but you're basically using the non-Hebrew words. So some Rishonim say that in order to be answered Kriya Shma Megillah, it's a non-starter without Ksav HaShiris is nothing to talk about. So that idea is basically what the people God of here is saying, Bidasa Ozeru as well. That when the Mishnah says that Kleisa B'Chaloshin is Chayim, B'Chaloshin is not Adab. Chaloshin is referring to the language, it's not talking to the Ksav. Ksav must be under all circumstances, has to be Ksav HaShiris. That's the suggestion that the people God of gives. So this is a Gevalah Keter, it's very long the Sheter, it makes a lot of sense. We even have precedent for it in other sugyas, but the Mechilas covered the Hail Gehenna for the brother. It's no fault of his. This is not the correct teretz of the Yerzarua for the following reason, because Yerzarua himself asks this question on himself. Isn't he against the Mishnah? And he, in fact, does not give this teretz. Maybe it's an independently correct teretz, but this is not the Yerzarua himself's teretz. How come the Pribogram didn't know that? Because the other people didn't see the Ezra, so it was out of print for about 600 years. It was sitting in some library somewhere, in some archive somewhere, in some museum in Europe, hundreds and hundreds of years. So there are Rishonim who had snips of the Ezra, they had pieces of the Ezra, they had quotations from the Ezra, but the Ezra itself was not subject to public review for quite some time. The days of the Prima Gadim, it still had not made into the public. But the days of the Mishnah Berurah, already it was. The Mishnah Berurah lived already 100 years after the Prima Gadim. So for the days of the Mishnah Berurah, he writes that, Baruch Hashem, we've been zoicha to the publishing of the manuscript of the Yerzarua. And now we looked inside the Yerzarua, we see that the Yerzarua asked this kasha and gave a different teretz. So it's an interesting teretz the Prima Gadim says. And again, it has a certain degree of truth maybe in other sugyas. But this is probably not the Yerzarua Teretz himself. So, Taka, what is the Yerzarua Teretz? How does the Yerzarua deal with this Mishnah? If you don't go down the root of the Prima Gadim. So, the Yerzarua himself writes that the phrase that Kaisi B'Chaloshon, Kol doesn't mean literally every language. Kol means other Lashon. Some Lashon is yeah and some Lashon is no. But what does that mean? Some yes, some no. So, says the Yerzarua, the other languages, the language that one would be chayef writing in is Greek. It says the Kaisa B'Chaloshon. B'Chaloshon doesn't mean every single language. There weren't so many languages in the days of Chazal. Either you were writing in Hebrew or writing in Greek. There wasn't that much. No one was taking international writing classes. So it was either Hebrew or Greek. So when the Mishnah says the Kaisa B'Chaloshon, it means not only Hebrew, but even Greek. My Mishnah is Greek. So So that already has a source. That's a great, also Gemara in Sechas Megillah. But the Gemara even quotes the possibility of perhaps writing a Sefer Torah in Greek. The Gemara quotes such an opinion. You can even write a Sefer Torah itself in Greek. Why? Because Greek has a certain halachic significance to it. The Gemara derives it from a pasuk Yafta l'kim b'yefes v'yishka b'ol l'shem, that Yefes was one of the Yefes was Yavan, that the culture of Yefes is going to be b'ol l'shem. That means that the world of halach is that you can even write a Sefer Torah in b'ol l'shem. You can write it invoking the language of Yefes, i.e. the language of Greek. So the Gemara quotes such an opinion. So comes as the Rud says, Abazoi, you can write a Sefer Torah in Greek. So you see that the Torah gives it significance. So the only kind of ksavim, the only kinds of writing that is significant in halacha are only the official ksavim and the lashonis recognized by the Torah Kedosha. And the only things that are recognized by the Torah Kedosha as to be acceptable halachic acts of ksiva, just as in Ilchos Sefer Torah, only it's either ksav Ashuris or ksav Yevodis, nothing more, nothing less. So too, vis-a-vis writing on Shabbos, nothing more, nothing less. And that's how the Azarul learns the pshat in the Mishnah. How did the Azarul say such a difficult pshat? That's the Mishnah, the Chesba Chol Lashon. That's what Chol Lashon means. Chol Lashon is Greek. Lashon sounds like it means a thousand other languages. So how did the Azarul say such a thing? So the Azarul says, don't blame me, it's the Feirish Yerushalmi. He says, if you take a look at the Yerushalmi, Yerushalmi says it. What exactly does the Rishami say? So the Rishami writes on this Mishnah, Akaisi b'chalosh and chayav, Rishami writes, Kigon, Aleph, Alpha. That's what says the Rishami. Aleph, Alpha, Lamed, right? Alpha, 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 Beta, Gamma. It says Aleph, Alpha. So it says there is a Ruah. What does that mean? Kigon, Aleph, Alpha. That's exactly what the Mishnah is coming to tell you, is that Yechayav for writing either Aleph, which is a Hebrew letter, or for writing Alpha, which is a Greek letter. I'm not so proficient in ancient Greek. I think it's, I don't know if it's the same letters that they use in Greek today. Greek today, I don't think so. I think the Rambam describes that the Greek that Chazal was referring to was an old, ancient script of Greek, like the letters. I think they have a delta, that kind of stuff. So comes the Yerushalmi and uses that phrase called Aleph Alpha. Says there's a rule. You see from your raya, the only chayav. If you write in Greek. So what would anybody else say about this Rishami? Start off the Shia by saying, there are some rules in Nashiach. Nobody else held this way. Nobody else like this. So what does everybody else say with this Rishami? So the Mishnagura writes that he's not so convinced this is the Pshat of the Rishami. Rishami is very, very vague, as it very often is. The Rishami just says, Aleph Alpha. That's all it says. So the Mishnagura says he thinks that maybe the Rishami is talking about other things. Maybe Yishav is talking about that a person had the word Aleph and then he added an Aleph to the word Aleph. And he made, so maybe one could argue, maybe that's not so significant. You just went from the word Aleph to the word Alpha. Maybe it's not such a Shinoi. So Kamash Malad, it is a Shinoi. The Gemara is not even talking about which kind of languages. The Gemara, the Mishnah says what kind of language. First, the Chaloshim is finished. Yishav is not mitigating that. The Mishnah, Yishav is talking about different topics. About turning Alephs into Alphas, about maybe writing one letter in Hebrew, one letter in other languages. The Gemara can be told about a half a dozen other that to say the only chayav writing in Lashon HaKodesh, or perhaps in Greek, so the Mishnagura doesn't think that that was correct. He said the overwhelming majority of the Shon did not buy into that, notwithstanding what it says in Rishon. So the two big quote unquote sources for Zeruah, one was the signing of the documents when buying the house from the non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael on Shabbos. So the fact that Chazal lifted a merely Akam, that was Raya number one. You see from here that it must be that writing Mishalosh is only the Rabbanim, otherwise they wouldn't have lifted the Isser. So they said that's probably not the Muchach, that they lifted the Isser, even though it was a potential Derais. It was a merely Akam on the one Derais, and that they still lifted. And the second Raya from Loshen Yushami is again also far from proof. We don't know. It's very hard to tell exactly what the command of Yushami was. But we're still sticking with this view. I mean, at least it's part of our lamdus, not necessarily halacha, but still part of our lamdus, this view of the Azarua, that there is such a possibility that writing Mishael Lashonis may only be a dirabon. It's possibly related to this idea that another issue comes up in Rishonim, and we start off the shiur by saying that Siva impacts in other areas of halacha as well. There is a view in Rishonim that appears in the Hagos Magni notes. The Hagos Magni was a Talmud of the Rambam Ruttenberg. He was a contemporary of the Rosh, the Mordechai. So he goes, Maimonides, so he quotes from earlier Rishonim, who discussed something that may be impacted by the Sefer, the Ozarua. the following Shabbos, based on the Gemara at the beginning of Maseches Gittin. The Gemara talks about the halachas regarding sirtut. Sirtut means drawing, making lines, making a ruler. You look at the Sefer Torah, you'll notice that there are etchings, ruler lines, that all the lines of the Ksav are all lined up properly. So that's a din called sirtut. And there are several din of sirtut that have to be observed. The one din of sirtut, which everybody agrees to, that's sirtut in a mezuzah. When a mezuzah requires sirtut, the Gemara says that is halacha Moshe B'Sinai. That's a given, that's not negotiable. That mezuzah requires sirtut. The other end, the Gemara says that tefillin don't require sirtut. There is no real requirement to do sirtut on tefillin. That's a question, why is there such a distinction between tefillin and mezuzah? Is that just not halacha Moshe B'Sinai? Is there some rationale to it? That's a whole discussion about that. But the bottom line is the Gemara of the Pharisee said halacha Moshe B'Sinai mezuzah requires sirtut, and tefillin don't require sirtut. The Rishonim write that, most Rishonim write that if the sirtut will help you write nicer, then you talk a shit with sirtut even on tefillin. But it would be a nice thing to do. I'll take the mitzvah. That's what our practice is. That's why if you look at it, next time you open up your tefillin, you can look all tefillin and have sirtut anyway. But the requirement of sirtut on tefillin is not as significant as for mezuzah. Mezuzah is ma'akeh b'di'evet, and tefillin is only a lechatchila mishum the mitzvah. There is a machlokes of Rishonim whether Sefer Torah requires sirtut or not. Strangely enough, the Gemara talks explicitly about tefillin and explicitly about mezuzah with two different conclusions. And Sefer Torah, the Gemara never says, so there's machlokes of Rishonim, what the din is about Sefer Torah. So our minhag is we do sirtut on Sefer Torah because the Shabbat deraisa, maybe according to some Rishonim, that's included in halacha Moshe B'Sinai. So that we do sirtut on Megillas Esther actually also requires sirtut. That the Gemara says explicitly, Kabita Shel Torah requires sirtut as well. So certain things require sirtut, require those lines to be made with absolute certainty. And not doing it can potentially disqualify the entire Chetz Shel Mishnah. Then there's another din, or related din, of sirtut. And that's the sugi that appears in the first Pech of Gittin. But the Gemara writes that you're not really supposed to write any psukim. I'm not writing a Sefer Torah. I'm not writing for Mizzou. I'm not writing a Megillah. I'm writing a Pasuk. You're not supposed to write any psukim or even parts of psukim. And different opinions, how much is a part of psukim? Two, three, whatever it is. You're not supposed to write words from psukim or phrases from psukim without doing sirtut. That's the whole sugi of the first Pech of Masechet Gittin. It's a long, long Taishas here about Sirtut. And very often the Shivas, when they learn the first Pech of Gittin, so if they're spending the first 6 months on Mephana Nechta, Fai Nechta, Rabin, Rabin, Nechta, Mamela, this is like a breather a little bit. It's a little bit of a lighter sugi. There happens to be a lot of Taishas in the sugi of Sirtut. So maybe the Rebbe might get into Sirtut for a while. I remember when I was learning in Kembi Avnus, one year we were learning the first Pech of Masechet Gittin. And some of the Rebbeim was spending a little bit too much time in the Sugya of Sirtut, one Rosh Hashiva was satisfied with. So I remember once at the Sheikh Lali, he was like giving the Sheikh Lali the test, and all the Shiva was still in the Vav and Sirtut. So I remember he commented that, Mechlat Kvaldchem, Anachal Bolom Dvi Masechet Sirtut by Yeshiva. So we're learning Masechet Gittin, and therefore he thinks it was Kedai for it to move on. And I remember that phrase calling Masechet Sirtut. So bottom line is, there's a din that you have to do Sirtut whenever you write anything. So there goes Maimini quotes a practice that people had not to do sirtut. People write psukim all the time. They weren't writing sirtut. Why weren't they writing sirtut? So there goes Maimini writes, because they weren't writing in Ksava Shuris with block letters like Sefer Torah. They're writing something with the Rishonim called Ksiva Daka. Those are probably to a script kind of a letter, writing. I don't know if it's officially the Rashi script or Rashi script or some other kind of script, but it's basically not Ksava Shuris in the bold, you know, big, fat letters like you think of, you know, the Sefer Torah letters, but it was more of a script, Ksiva Daka kind of a thing, more of a scripty kind of a thing, and therefore there's no need to do Sirtut, because says there, I'm not saying it was already Simchus quoted by the Gos Mamani, that's not Ksiva, that's not Halachic Ksiva. The Torah only recognizes Ksiva, Ksiva means Ksava Shuris. And the din that you have to do sirtut is when you write letters. I'm not writing letters. This is a make-believe. It's a joke. This is not really writing letters. And therefore, one wouldn't require sirtut. So what is that saying? That seems to be saying is some kind of an idea that even though everyone knows what these letters are representing, everyone knows this is supposed to be an aleph, it's supposed to be a bay, everyone can read it. Everyone knows what the message is we're taking away from reading these letters. But it doesn't matter. There are certain halachic requirements of letters, aseus, and ksav. And if something doesn't meet those criteria, then it's not called ksav, and it's not subject, not bound by the din of ksav. So that's a similar kind of an idea. When I read something in English, I know exactly what it says. I can read the message, I can read the letter, I can read the book, but it's not halachli ksiva, and therefore it's not subject to certain din of ksiva. So similar to what the Rosh Maimon is saying, vis-a-vis the sugya of sirtut, is what the Rebbeinu, what the Ozarua, the Noach, other Rishonim are saying these are because of the Shabbos as well. But next we have to figure out, is this really correct? Is this comparison really right? And how does this impact on other areas of Malacha as well? And again, even though, as I mentioned at the beginning of the year, we're spending a lot of time on this as a rule, even though Malacha, we don't really accept it, but it does serve as a little bit of a springboard. It already enabled us today to identify some of the sugyas related to Chassav and Lashon and Sefer Torah and Mezuzahs and Megillah and Kosev Shabbos and Sirtot. So this is used a little bit of a springboard to get ourselves acclimated to some of the main parts of the sugya of Kosev. So next week, we'll try to go a little bit further into the Azarua and see how this plays out for us as well. Okay, wish everyone a wonderful